are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Welcome to another episode of Call for Caring on Purpose podcast. My name is Michelle Bolden, and I'm your host as we journey through caregiving together. The goal of the Call for Caring on Purpose podcast is to educate, elevate, and empower our caregivers during their caregiver journey. Our initial episodes are going to lead us to our third biannual Atlanta Family Caregiver Expo. And so we'll provide a little more details at the end of our conversation today. So today we're starting part of a series about care options for your loved ones. And so we're going to focus on hospice today. In 2016, the Department of Health and Human Services conducted a survey regarding the awareness and misperceptions of hospice and palliative care. They found that most adults did not mention the major components of those types of service, which implies that there's a low level of awareness about these services. Misinformation was found to be common among communities regarding the services. So there are education initiatives they found that are needed and awareness, and also just reducing the misconceptions. And so our conversation today is with Enid Wright of Sovereign Health Hospice. And she's hopefully is going to help us to kind of clear up some of that misinformation. And maybe this may be an option for your family. So I want to welcome Enid to today's episode. And thanks so much for joining us.
Okay. Thank you, Michelle, for having me.
Absolutely. So can you start by sharing a little bit about your background and kind of your work that you're doing now?
Okay. Well, again, thanks, Michelle, for having me on your podcast today. And I just want to say I have known Michelle for a little while, and she's always interested in education, and so am I. I really am fascinated by this, and I love to educate the public. And talking about hospice is one of my greatest pleasure.
Oh, awesome.
I have been a registered nurse for over 40 years. I started with my initial training in Jamaica. I did some education in Scotland as a midwife. And then I left from there, went to New York, worked for a while. And then I came to Atlanta. So I've been in Atlanta now for over 30 years, where I've practiced and I've done all different forms of nursing, all the different disciplines. And I came upon hospice, and I've worked in hospice for close to 18 years, almost 20 years in hospice. Okay. And then about 7 years ago, I decided to start my own company with a couple of other people. We decided, well, you know what? I think we can do this a little bit better than some of the things we're seeing. So I am now the proud owner of Sovereign Hospice.
Awesome. Wonderful. Congratulations. 7 years. That's great. It sounds like you love to educate. And I think that's so important, especially with hospice, because as we talked about, there's that misconception about what it is. So when you're speaking with the family, how do you normally describe hospice?
Okay. So talking to the family, that is so important. First, let me say, every family is different, and my approach is usually based on what that family knows about hospice. Mm. That is why I always like to ask families when I sit down with them, what do you know about hospice? Or tell me, what is your perception of hospice? Then based on that information, I then proceed to define hospice care and give them the Medicare, Medicaid eligibility. Because families are going to tell you what they are hearing out there. Mm-hmm. And you want to make sure that you're going to give them the right information. So I like to hear from them, what is it that they know about hospice before I give them the information that I have? Because like you said earlier on in your conversation, in your introduction, that there's a lot of misperception. So I like to hear what they have to say before I give my information.
So what are just some of the most common misconceptions about hospice in general that you always have to resolve during these conversations?
Okay, hospice. One of the misconceptions is people think you are going to kill their family members. Mm. The moment they hear hospice, they think, oh my gosh, a person's going to die right away. Mm-hmm. And I think that is what one of the reasons is because a lot of times patients are referred to hospice too late. And so the patient, because the patient is referred late, then and they die as soon as they come onto service, then the families think, oh my gosh, you, the hospice provider, is the cause of the death of the patient. Mm. And that is one of the misconceptions. So we always have to clear that up to let them know, no, it's not, we did not cause the death of the patient. Mm-hmm. It's because maybe the patient came on service too late.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. So can you explain the difference between home health and hospice, how they're the same and how they're different? Because they're both in the home, so sometimes that can be confusing.
Yes. Now, home health and hospice both provide care for the patient at home. Or wherever they call home, wherever they live. That could be in their residence at home. It could be in a personal care home. It could be in an assisted living or a nursing home. They both have skilled nursing service. That means an LPN or an RN providing care. They both have a certified nursing assistant coming to assist with bath. However, for home health, you have that is geared toward making the patient well. You're trying to get a patient better, and you're providing treatment and treatment management. Whereas in hospice, we're providing comfort care. That patient has a terminal illness. They're going to die. So we are providing comfort care until that patient passes. And that's one of the big difference between home health and hospice.
And so have you found that there are cases in which you provide hospice and then the patient or client gets better and they come off?
Oh, yes, that happens sometimes. Patients do come on hospice and we graduate them from hospice. Okay. Yes, there are patients who sometimes come on hospice and they are no longer eligible because they get better. Or their symptoms have been managed totally and they start improving. And in that case, we have to discharge them because they have their symptoms have improved, their conditions have changed, and they start to improve. So we have to discharge those patients.
And you know, I've seen a few cases in which we have clients in which we've helped with hospice and they've gotten better. And I tell people, I think they get better because there are so many resources that come in from hospice that supports them, that allows for them to do that. So people kind of underestimate the amount of support they can get through hospice. So can you tell me a little bit about palliative care and kind of what is that and how that connects under or next to hospice?
Okay, so palliative care, and I know sometimes people mix up the difference between palliative care. One of the challenges in the implementation of palliative care has been a lack of consensus on what palliative care is, when it should be applied, to whom and by whom. The terms palliative care and hospice care have been used for many years with different interpretation. And several organizations have in turn adopted their own definitions. And I'm reading this from document that I did some research on. The current World Health Organization definition for palliative care for adults was adopted in 2002 and poses many challenges and limits palliative care to problems associated with life-threatening illnesses rather than the need of patients with severe chronic and complex conditions. What they're saying is that palliative care, in a simple way I can say it is, palliative care, you are allowed, the patient is allowed, even with a terminal illness, to continue their treatment and continue, for instance, if a patient who has cancer, they can continue their chemotherapy, they can continue their radiation treatment. Whereas if a patient who's in hospice with cancer cannot continue treatment while they're on hospice care. Okay. And that is a simple way to understand it.
Okay. We like simple. We like simple.
Yes.
So for the palliative care, we're really looking at, there are some treatment therapies that are going on. It could be the chemo, it could be OT or PT. Is that correct?
Yes.
They could have those things.
Mm-hmm.
While under hospice, they're not. They're pretty much just kind of comfort, just really comfort.
Right. And let me clarify, hospice patients do get PT and OT too,
okay.
But it's at limited, not continuous. You know, it's a limited. Okay. It's limited. Yeah.
Now, can someone be on, have home health and hospice? They have to choose one or the other one.
Right. You cannot be on home health and hospice at the same time. Once a patient, if a patient is on home health and then they are eligible for hospice, the home health stops the moment they start hospice.
Okay. And so who determines your eligibility? Is that the physician? Who makes that determination?
Okay. So Medicare has eligibility guidelines, which they use. And the physician, the medical director, the hospice medical director determines the diagnosis based on the Medicare eligibility guidelines. So we look at the eligibility, we look at the patient's symptoms, we look at their diagnosis, and we look at the Medicare guidelines that Medicare sets out. We call them the LCDs, local determinations, and then the medical director determines if that patient is eligible based on all those things. We put all those things together.
Okay. So now that we just mentioned Medicare, so who covers the costs of the hospice service? Out of pocket, Medicare, Medicaid, how does that work?
Okay. So hospice is a Medicare benefit. And that is one of the things that I really, really want to emphasize, because a lot of people don't realize that it is a benefit. And when something is a benefit, it means that it is something that you get. So if you have Medicare Part A, it is covered 100%. Hospice is covered 100%. So you don't have to pay a penny if you have Medicare Part A. This covered 100% hospice is. And also private insurance does cover hospice.
Okay.
Some private insurance is 100%. You may have a copay.
Okay.
But most of the time it is covered 100%. And Medicaid also covers hospice 100%.
So if I have Medicare and Medicaid and I have a percentage out of Medicare, then Medicaid will cover it. But you said it's all covered at 100%.
It's all covered at 100%. So if you say, Michelle, you have Medicare and you also have Medicaid, Medicare will cover your hospice 100%.
Okay. And so when you say cover, the services that it covers, can you kind of, so there's a nurse who's involved and there's a chaplain. Can you kind of talk about what's in those services?
Okay. So yes, let me speak to what the service is. So hospice is a team approach. So it's a team of these are disciplines that covers the hospice, that provides the care. You have the medical director, who is the doctor. You have a nurse, who is your case manager, an RN case manager. You also have a social worker. You have a chaplain. You have a hospice aide and a volunteer. We also have LPNs who are interchangeable, who can also do visits. So that's your team that provides that service for you.
Now, what are there supplies that are covered through hospice as well?
Yes. Now, your supplies, there are all your medications that are related to the hospice diagnosis. Depending on what the diagnosis is, whatever medications that are related to the diagnosis, those are covered under hospice. Hospice pays for those medications. And we also pay for the supplies. Say, for instance, things like your diapers.
The chucks or pads.
Chucks and the pads and this, and soap and all of those supplies, all your equipment, DME equipment, if you need a hospital bed, a wheelchair, a walker, those supplies are covered. And like I said, medications are covered.
And so when you mentioned DME, just so our listeners know, that's durable medical equipment.
Durable medical equipment. Right, that yes, that's the equipment like the bed and your wheelchair, all those.
And so I just think it's important that people know that as well, because those supplies can be very costly when you have to buy the pens and bed chucks, disposables. That those can be very costly, and just having the benefit of that can be impactful. Right. So, you know, I tell people, if you qualify for that service, you want to look at that. It doesn't mean that it's serving you, like you said, you know, a death sentence, honestly, but it may be just some more resources to help you to get to over where you are right now, or to have you have a gradual quality of life as you begin to transition. That's what you determine you want to have. Mm-hmm. Right? So now sometimes there's hospice where you can do it in home, and then there's also inpatient hospice. Can you kind of explain the difference and kind of what's a requirement one over the other?
Okay. So we have in hospice what you call levels of care. And that's what Medicare establishes. There are four levels of care in hospice. And we have what routine home care, inpatient care, respite care, and continuous care. And I will explain each of those levels of care very quickly. Routine home care is what Medicare encourages, and that is what the care that you get in the home. The patient is at home, they stay at home, everybody comes to all the disciplines, everybody comes and takes care of patient in their home. That is routine home care. Inpatient care, which is or what you might hear they refer to as GIP, general inpatient, that is another level of care where if there's a crisis and the patient is in a crisis, say they're in a pain crisis and it can't be taken care of at home, then the patient has to have an eligibility. They must be eligible to go into the inpatient. Mm. They must have some reason. And then they are moved from home and goes into the inpatient, but they can't stay there all the time. They can't stay there for a long period of time. It has to be on a short-term basis. So they're put in the inpatient unit and the crisis is managed, whatever the situation is, it's taken care of, and then they're taken back home.
Okay.
Then respite, the patient goes to respite for 5 days, and that is to give the family member, the caregiver, a break. So you can take the patient to either an inpatient unit, or respite can be given in a skilled nursing facility. They have to have round-the-clock skilled nurse to provide respite care, and that's for 5 days. And then continuous care that can take place in the patient, wherever the patient resides. We bring the care in. Usually the nurse, they have to have nursing care for at least 8 hours out of a 24-hour period. That is from 12 midnight to 12 midnight. We have continuous care. That also has to have an eligibility. It has to be a crisis situation, again, similar to what happens if the patient is going into an inpatient unit. And it doesn't go on forever. It usually is 24, 48, maybe 2 or 3 days. And once that crisis is over, then you go back to routine home care. So those are the 4 levels of care.
Okay, well, so the respite, is that 5 days a year or 5 days in a lifetime?
No. They can have 5 days every month. We have some patients like every month, okay. Somebody wants it at least once a month. Okay. So, you know, when the family is, if they want to, sometimes families want to go away. They have an emergency or they have a trip or the family has something planned and they want to put go out of town or something, or they're just exhausted, okay. And they want their loved one to we put them in the inpatient unit for those 5 days.
Okay, and you mentioned about the continuous care. So then they go back to their routine. They have that crisis period handled in the home. They go back to the routine. So that kind of brings me to the question of, how can hospice be supported by other inpatient services? For example, like what we do with in-home personal companion care. Do you see that happening for people who have hospice?
Okay, sure. Hospice can be supported by lots of other services, like you mentioned, because hospice is not there all the time, is not in a patient's home. And that too is a misconception that families have sometimes. They think, okay, hospice is going to come and they're going to sit with my loved one all the time. They're going to be there all the time. No, we don't come and sit in patient's home. So that is where companion care comes in. We can refer them to other services outside. And that is where our social worker comes in. Our social worker is very good. And that's why we encourage families to have a conversation, talk with our social worker, because our social worker can then say, listen, if there's a need in the home where they see the family may need companion care, yes, that the companions can come in and sit with that patient. That is where companion care comes in. They may need somebody because maybe the family has to go, primary caregiver has to go out and work, and they're going to need somebody to sit with, right. Provide sitter service. Mm-hmm. So you can bring a companion in to provide additional support. That's one. But that is a paid service. There's also other services out there like CCSP, mm-hmm. and SOURCE, and those other services that are there. The social worker can speak to that and give more information on those services.
That's great. Because, you know, even, you know, just the sitting, but sometimes they need to sleep, right? So they're always going. And so sometimes it's good at night to have someone there so you can get some rest as well. And you can be ready to take care of your loved one during the day.
Exactly.
So that's another way that I know we've seen to support them. So this has been great information. And if you would say 2 actions you recommend that our family caregivers take today, immediately, what would those 2 things be after they listen to the podcast?
Okay, 2 things. And I highly recommend this. Number one, please, please, please sit down with your family and have a conversation about end of life or aging. Plan for aging. I have that conversation with my family every single day, whether they want to listen or not.
Right. That's a hard conversation.
I know it is a hard conversation, but you know what? The more you talk about it, the easier it gets.
Right.
Sit down and talk with your family members about aging. Plan for aging because it's going to happen. It's coming. It's not going away.
That's right.
And the next conversation is talk with your PCP. If you have elder families in your home or in your surroundings, talk to your doctor, because sometimes doctors are afraid or a little bit hesitant about bringing up the hospice conversation because they think that you might be afraid too, and they don't want to bring that subject up. And some doctors too, doctors are trained to save lives and to take care of people, and so they don't want to talk about it. Believe it or not, doctors don't want to talk about hospice.
Right.
So if you bring the subject up, they might be surprised and think, oh my gosh, really? Yes, you want to talk about hospice because it's not something, don't be afraid of talking about hospice. We're not here to kill your loved one. We're not here to take away their medicines. We're not here to give them morphine because that is another misconception.
Yes.
They think that you're going to come and give them morphine and they're going to die. No, that's not what we're here for. We're here to provide some support and to wrap our arms around you and to help you provide some comfort and peace in your home. So talk to your loved ones, discuss the aging process, and talk to your doctor.
Okay. So how can our listeners get in touch with you, to your organization? Can you give us some websites, phone numbers? What's the best way to reach out to
you? Oh, definitely. Sovereign, we have a website. It's www.sovereignhospiceinc.com. And our phone number is 470-223-3773. And we are in Sandy Springs on Roswell Road, 6065 Roswell Road, Suite 520, okay. Sandy Springs.
Okay. And you know, I know that, you know, there are listeners who are not just in Georgia, but I think most of this information applies to wherever you are, because we're talking about general terms and hospice and helping to get rid of some of this misinformation and misperceptions. So I think you did that with a lot of the questions that you answered, and I'm so grateful for your conversation. I just also want to remind listeners, I thought some of the key points were just identifying early the need for hospice, and so that you can really truly appreciate that journey. And it's not really a reactive thing, it's much more of a proactive journey as well. And then also all the services that are in there. I don't think people understand how much of a team that you get, an all-around team, and then also the covering of those supplies that I know can be very expensive. And so thank you so much, Enan, for the information you provided. It was a great conversation. So thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle, for having me on anytime. And like you said, your listeners can always call on us. We are available 24/7, and we will welcome any phone calls, and we'll answer any questions. It was such a pleasure to talk with you today.
Awesome. Thank you. And so we're going to take a break with our sponsor. So after the break, we're going to continue our conversation with a family caregiver who's going to share her family's experience with hospice. So we'll talk to you after the break.
Call for Caring, in partnership with Impact Church, presents the 2021 Atlanta Family Caregivers Expo on Saturday, November 20th, 2021, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The event will be held outdoors in the Impact Courtyard to ensure the environment complies with all CDC guidelines. Attendees may also participate via Zoom and Facebook Live. The Atlanta Family Caregivers Expo is a great opportunity for family caregivers to find the resources they need to ensure a quality of life for their loved ones and themselves, including COVID-19 testing and vaccinations, flu vaccines, blood pressure and glucose screenings, speaker series, one-on-one consultations regarding caregiving issues, raffles, care scholarships, and much, much more. This year, we will offer complimentary companion care for your loved one. Space is limited, so register early. You can register today at callforcaring.org. Thank you to our gold sponsors, Home Helpers of North Atlanta, Impact Church of the United Methodist Church North Georgia District, AARP Georgia, Cigna Medicare, and Pruitt Health.
So welcome back. We're continuing our conversation about hospice. According to the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization, enrollment in hospice programs has risen steadily over the past two decades. A number of people have received hospice services between 1990 to 2013. It increased seven times from 210,000 to over 1.5 million. So as we talked about the need for education in the community about hospice, we are seeing there is a growth in its use. And so our next guest is Amy Hudson. She is one of a family caregivers who chose a hospice journey. Welcome, Amy.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and I'm really happy to be here.
Great, and we're happy to have you. So I wanted you to start by kind of telling us a little bit about yourself and then also your loved one who you supported as a family caregiver through the hospice journey.
Yeah. So for me, my whole career has been writing. You know, I've been in communications, marketing, journalism. I've been in all of that for many, many years. And when my father became ill and after he passed, I just realized how important storytelling is. Mm-hmm. That is when I realized how much it means for a family to capture their family stories. And when your parent becomes ill, or if your parent dies suddenly and you haven't captured those stories, then, you know, it's too late. Mm-hmm. And so for me, a big part of this journey, you know, having a career in communications, having a career in writing, all of a sudden, it seemed to me that, wait, you really need to write these stories about your own family. You need to write stories about your parents, because both of my parents actually passed away in 2016. Mm-hmm. But my dad is the one we're here to talk about today. Mm-hmm. So storytelling just became really, really important during the journey of hospice and after he passed.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell me a little bit about your dad and kind of how you guys decided upon hospice as an option for your family?
Well, yeah, his condition was pretty much from the get-go. You know, he received a diagnosis of terminal cancer. And I think he chose wisely not to do the chemo route. And I remember when we were in the hospital, and I remember seeing the palliative care folks, and they came in and really helped us to understand what was coming. And he seemed to really understand what was coming. And he seemed to be very much at peace with it. I think he wanted to enjoy whatever time he had left. He wanted to enjoy it to the full. And that was in the hospital. And even then he was enjoying the experience. It sounds so strange, but we had music going all the time. My dad was a musician and an artist. And so we had fellow musicians and friends coming in, and they would sing around the hospital bed. And we have all these videos of that in the hospital. And then from there, we went to a rehabilitation center, and he learned how to just cope with things like getting his clothes on because he was paralyzed from the waist down. You know, things like just how to cope once he did get home, you know, how to live the day to day and do what he could on his own, and also then rely on caregivers. And I will tell you that all the caregivers in the hospital, the caregivers at the rehabilitation hospital, and then the caregivers that we had in the home. They were all wonderful, and he felt just comfortable being himself. I mean, he had to be vulnerable. He had to humble himself, you know, to have people take care of everything that happens below your, you know, below your waist after you're paralyzed. And it was just, I call it a beautiful relationship that he was able to develop with all of his caregivers. You know, it was amazing to watch it. Mm-hmm. It really was amazing.
And I remember for you all that this was a sudden diagnosis. This was like he had never been sick in his life. And can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh gosh, I remember he used to just brag about, I'm eating my raw spinach sandwich today with peanut butter. And we would just go, that just sounds disgusting. You know, I'm going to go eat something that's not healthy over here and just enjoy yourself, Dad, with that, you know. And he would walk a lot, and he just, you know, he would brag about, I've lost 20 pounds. And, you know, he was just very healthy. And I always thought my dad would live until at least into his 90s. And mm-hmm. he just seemed kind of ageless. And he was such a cool guy, you know, because of his music and everything, you know, he's just too cool. And I never thought that he would ever get sick. So he was very healthy. And then we just realized he was having a little bit of trouble walking. And I think we were all in denial at first. And he certainly was, because he thought of himself as healthy. Mm-hmm. And it was sudden. We went into the emergency room on the morning of April 22nd. I remember that date, 2016, as clear as can be. And then by that evening, you know, we were in ER all day long. And I finally went back. They had him in the back. And I finally went back to see what is going on here. And he had his baseball cap over his eyes, and he was lying on a stretcher. And, you know, just, he's a meditator. He was a meditator. You know, he would meditate. And I imagine that's what he was doing, because he had already received the news. Mm. When I walked up, the doctor walked up to me and explained what was going on, that it was cancer. It was kidney cancer had entered his spine. And that's why he was having trouble being able to walk. And it was pretty much a terminal diagnosis right in there.
And, you know, so at what point did the hospital or that team began to talk about hospice?
Well, it was literally pretty quick. You know, it came pretty quickly. I would say within a week, mm-hmm. we had that palliative care team coming to talk. I remember it was a big circle of family in a hospital room, and mm-hmm. Dad was in his bed sitting up, and there were probably eight of us in the room. His brother, his brother's wife, my stepmom, his wife, myself, my sister, I'm sure was there, maybe a couple other family members and the palliative care team and a couple of folks there. And I just remember them saying, do you understand, you know, what we're talking about here? We're here to make the rest of your time be as just quality filled as it can be and as comfortable as it can be. And that's what we're here to do. And so we want to provide you with all the options about hospice. We really didn't know. One thing we didn't know about hospice, I kind of naively thought that there would be a round the clock hospice nurse all the time, you know, and once we went home, it was like, no worries, you know, that's not the way it works.
Yes. Right.
They can't do that. You know, hospice is amazing. I'm ever so grateful. Even my mom was in hospice, you know, for just one night. She was not in hospice at home, but in a hospice care center in her situation. But with him, he was so fortunate to have time and be able to come home. And his whole illness, he lived for four good solid months. Mm-hmm. Once he hit that diagnosis, 4+ months. And most of that was at home with hospice care. And the thing I wanted to say is Home Helpers was the company that we use. That's your company. And it couldn't have been better. And if we hadn't have had you guys, I don't know what we would have done. And we couldn't afford it. We had to do a GoFundMe, a crowdfunder, to raise the money to do it. But he had an amazing community. And so we raised that money and we were able to do it. And it was worth it.
You know, I tell you, and I think your experience was the intention of what, when you talk about palliative care or closer to end of life, in which the goal is to keep them comfortable. And so sometimes it could be 4 months, sometimes it could be 2 years, it could be 3 years. It just depends on the person. But the goal is that in the hospital, this came quick to you, but you were open to receive it and understand what the benefit of it was. And so that's what we're just asking people to understand. It's just kind of open your mind to it. It doesn't mean that someone is giving you a death sentence. Everyone's end is a little bit different, but it's the way that you capture the journey. And I think you guys captured that journey so well with loving your father and celebrating him. The community, like you said, came together. There were parties at 8 a.m. or 12 p.m. And so it was truly a celebration of life. And it's wonderful we can all live that way, you know. So tell me, how did this experience impact the relationship with your dad?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, my relationship with my dad was complicated for many years because my parents were divorced. And there was that time in my life where it was quite complicated. And then there came a time in my life where we were able to really, truly reconcile. Mm-hmm. And that was many years ago. I was in my, you know, late 20s at that time. And we were able to reconcile and really start growing a bond. But I'm going to tell you, when this happened with him, it was like, his heart just grew big. I mean, it was so big. His heart was so big. It just kept growing and growing. And it was amazing. And he would say to me and everybody else, he would look you in the eye and just say, I love you, 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 love you. And if you got caught in a hug, because he could still use that upper body really well. And thank God he could still use his hands to play his harmonica, because that was a lifesaver. But he was always a good hugger, but man, when he was sick, if you got locked in a hug, you were in a hug. And one of my nieces said, I think I was in a 45-minute hug one time. And I just stayed in it because, you know what? It meant a lot that he wanted to hug me that way, but I just had to shift around a lot. And I can relate to that. I'd probably been in a couple of 10 or 15-minute it was amazing. He expressed his love. He's a really an example of somebody who took a dire, dire situation and just turned it into something so joyful. And he would say, I am having so much fun. He would look around the room, whether there were 5 people or 30, which that happened.
Right.
He would look around the room and just say, I'm having so much fun right now.
Yeah. That's awesome. You know, so prior to this experience with your dad, what was your knowledge of hospice? What did you think hospice was?
I thought that it was, in my mind, I guess I thought that you went into hospice and that it kind of was like a mausoleum. Mm-hmm. And you would go into this kind of, I don't know, this sterile place. And I never really thought about hospice at home. You know, and one thing I do remember them telling us when they were talking to us, they were saying, this is something you renew every 6 months or whatever the time frame is. Mm-hmm. You know, we're going to review it. And this, like you said earlier, it's not a death sentence. Mm-hmm. It's not, okay, well, now we just shut everything down and it's all over and we're done. No, for us, it was a window into freedom. That's what I would say, a window to freedom, just the freedom to be together, the freedom to be whatever he wanted to be and how live however you wanted to live.
Right. That's awesome. That's a great way to express it. So how has that experience kind of changed your view? It just opened up a whole new
world. Oh my goodness. Yeah, of course. And I mean, I appreciated so much. I remember there was a social worker from hospice who would come. And I mean, when you're dealing with a situation like this, there's high stress. Mm-hmm. There's high stress at times. I mean, it wasn't all fun and lighthearted parties and all that. I mean, there was a lot of tough stuff and people weren't sleeping at night. And as much as we had help, my stepmom, I just think she probably averaged about 4 hours of sleep every night. You know, I mean, it was just, I don't think people realize how hard it's going to be. She was the primary caretaker from the family. You know, I didn't live there. I could come and go, and I came and went a lot. Mm-hmm. I made sure I was there just as much as I could be with a full-time job and raising a child and all that. But it's hard work. And so the stress can be high. And I just remember the social worker was amazing. You know, she would listen, and she had good advice, and she just made us feel like, okay, it's going to be all right today. It's right. going to be all right. Cause it was right. certainly day by day.
Right. And you know, that's one of the things that we had talked about earlier, as I was talking about with the hospice provider, is that the team of resources that you get. And so you talked about the social worker and how helpful she was. And then there's normally the chaplain and then the nurse who comes by. And so it's just so many resources that you can have access to. And often these teams have such an amazing amount of compassion that they empathize with what you're going through, and they're good listeners and also able to give you resources. So it's, you know, you guys had an amazing experience. And I know it is stressful. It's not all roses and all those good things, but it is the opportunity to kind of have the freedom to resolve some things maybe that were going on in relationship with you and another, to say those last things you wish you could say. Mm-hmm. Whether they're there here today or a year later, you have the opportunity to kind of have that closure. And so I think your family did a great job of doing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll tell you, one of the things I did, it was really hard to find alone time with my dad, because so many people were coming. It was a revolving door. They were just coming and going. But whether people were there or not, I had some alone time with him. And I had time with him when lots of people are around. And I'll tell you, one of the questions that you provided in advance of this was, you know, what would you say to somebody listening to this? What should they do right now?
Right. And so that's a good leeway, because that is my next question.
So the thing that
you recommend the caregivers take immediately after listening to this today.
Yeah, I would say, if you haven't taken your smartphone, which most people have, and found that voice app, that voice memo app, that's what it's called on the iPhone, voice memo app. I'm not sure on Android, but whatever it is, the record button, and just hit that thing. Just whenever you're there, hit the record button. Of course, you're going to ask permission from your loved one if that's okay. But I think most people will say it's okay. And I cannot tell you how much amazing just the stories that I got, the music that I was able to capture. I would do videos on my phone. Do that too, if you prefer to do video, but I love audio. And that was my preference, especially when I was having a conversation with him. I mean, I have a deep conversation with my dad where I talk about how he changed my life when we did reconcile, and the way that he did that. And I have that on my phone. I have that conversation.
And I would imagine hearing his voice saying whatever those words to you, hearing that again, is just amazing.
It's incredible. It's incredible to have that. And it's for me, that is just the one gift that I can't have him right now. I can't have him back alive again, but I can have, it's not just memories. It's there. I can go listen to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's awesome. That's definitely a great piece of advice for people to do, that they can do now while they still have their loved ones in their lives, you know. So now, are there any websites, social media sites, anything that you recommend people follow as they're kind of going through this journey or looking into starting this journey?
I would say, I mean, you're talking to me, and I talked about my storytelling. So that the sites I'm going to tell you about are the two passion projects that emerged after both of my parents passed away. Mm-hmm. And I think that certainly the My Story project, which is basically, Michelle, you even participated in it. Mm-hmm. It's basically coming together as a community. And that is the secret sauce for that project, My Story. You come together as a community of about 10 people, and you write your stories when you're not together. And then when you meet together, you share. And so we always have two or three people who are willing to read their stories. And when you joined, we started, obviously, it was right before COVID hit. And so when you joined, we were meeting in the home of one of our leaders. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful, don't you think?
Yes, absolutely. Amazing. Yes.
And so you got this encouragement from other people. People were so inspired by each other's stories. The whole purpose of the My Story Project is really to capture those stories. If you are a grandparent or a parent before it's too late, before you pass away, you know, to capture your life stories. And if your parents have passed away, you know, it, for me personally, it was just an opportunity to take, like, I had interviewed a ton of people after my parents passed away. And I was able to, you know, use that material to write and reflect on what others had to say about them. And then that inspired me to write my own stories about what happened in my own experience. And I wrote about that. So for you, you wrote about your dad who's still living, and you're an example of how important it is to talk to them while they're still alive. So for people who are listening to this, for caregivers, family members,
yes.
Oh my goodness, however you want to get those stories, you need to get those stories. And I think the My Story Project is very inspiring. We will start a new season in January of 2022.
So if people want to find out more information about My Story, what's the website that they can go to begin?
Yeah, it's easy. It's towritemystory.com.
Okay. Awesome.
Towritemystory.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Awesome. So that's one.
Yeah. So that's amazing. And I'm always so happy to talk with you and share the story about your dad and, you know, from your experience and how you really didn't know about hospice.
Right,
your family opened up and received that and had that great journey. And so you guys came together as a team, and I know your stepmom was the primary caregiver. And so that's the other thing about having community, to be able to have some relief and know that someone else is there. And so not only did you use family, but you also used the community as well. And so I thought that was an awesome way to do that. So thank you so much, Amy. It's always good to talk with you. And I certainly hope people go visit your website to learn about My Story. It was very impactful for me and my family. And we appreciate you sharing your journey. And I hope people after this will be able to open up and kind of maybe think about hospice as an option for their family. Right?
Oh, absolutely. Can I give you one more website?
Okay, sure.
So I have a podcast, all those recordings that I did when my dad was alive, and all those recordings of people that I went to after he passed away to get the stories about him, they are now part of a podcast.
Okay.
And it's called the Honky Tonk Papa Podcast. So people can also go to that.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Amy. I so appreciate speaking with you. And I know people got a lot of good information from this and just insight, comfort and support about making decisions that may not be traditional for some, but maybe an option to consider, right? So thank you again for joining us today. To our listeners, you can find out more information about our 2021 Atlanta Family Caregiver Expo that's coming up on November the 20th at callforcaring.org. The event this year is planned at this time for a hybrid of virtual and in-person. We'll continue to monitor that as the fall and winter comes along to see if we'll be doing that or not. But the outdoor venue is at Impact Church. The Call for Caring on Purpose podcast is part of the Finding Your Forte channel on Up to Me Radio at www.uptomeradio.com. It can also be heard on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. We hope that today's Call for Caring on Purpose podcast has met our goal to educate, elevate, and empower caregivers during their caregiver journey. Thank you.